Welcome to the Wellbeing Rebellion, the podcast that's changing workplace cultures for good. We're your hosts, Ngazi Weller
and Obehi Alafoje.
Let's get this rebellion started. On the Wellbeing Rebellion today, joining us all the way from Oklahoma, USA. Yeah, that's right. We are internationally known here at the Wellbeing Rebellion. Joining us is Michael Dickerson. Michael is the CEO and founder of Dickerson Consulting Group, a consulting firm specializing in human resources, stress management, workplace mental health, and well-being. He worked for over 13 years as a mental health professional at the Oklahoma Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse. So he's got a similar background to OB. Michael also holds a certificate in applied positive psychology from the Flourishing Center in New York, which is one of the world's leading institutions in the field of positive psychology. But his ultimate mission? To help leaders create a culture of well-being so that employees can uncover their strengths, find meaning, and flourish at work. He's even written a book about it, Struggle Well at Work: Positive Mental Health Strategies for a Flourishing Workforce. I am so excited to talk to Michael about how well-being attitudes, is particularly when it comes to workplace well-being, differ across the pond in this UK versus USA grudge match. I won't call it a grudge match. It's a love match. So let's dive in. Welcome to the Wellbeing Rebellion, Michael. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I love podcasts, and I just know this is going to be a great conversation.
Well, I'm very excited because I think, if I am right, you are our first international guest.
And this is my first international podcast. So
wow,
it's our both of my firsts.
Fantastic. It's It's been a while since I had a first time, so. So tell us, where are you calling us from today?
Yes. So I am in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, in the United States of America. So they consider Oklahoma. So there's this conversation, is Oklahoma the South or is Oklahoma the Midwest? And I always say it's both. So We're pretty close to Texas. We're really close to Kansas. We're really close to Arkansas, really close to New Mexico. So we're just like a hub around all these different states, because you go into Texas, they consider Texas the South. And I'm originally from Dallas, Texas, but I live in Oklahoma City. So I would say we're in the Midwest South part of the United States.
And I guess even I find myself curious as to how me in Manchester, UK, as gray and rainy as it is today, gets to be on the show with you in the Midwest South of the US. But it's because we are obviously in the same space. And you are a first-time caller, but long-time listener for the Wellbeing Rebellion. And you reached out over LinkedIn. So I was really, really curious to find out the differences in what the workplace well-being cultures are like in the US versus the UK.
So we've had a conversation before, and I think this is a good conversation to have. What I'm starting to see in the US is there's a lot of investment starting to be made around well-being. And so usually when we talk about that, it used to be under the umbrella of wellness. But now people are like, oh, well, we just don't need to look at physical health. We need to look at more of the holistic perspective of the person. So that means looking at their mental health, which I really talk a lot about, looking at their spiritual health, looking at their financial health. And so I really like this investment into, let's look at the whole person, not just focus on, because a lot of corporations and a lot of business always had it under the guise of wellness. And so that's always been, and wellness is great. And I do a lot of wellness speaking, and I love the wellness people, but now even the wellness industry is coming like, hey, all right, let's think about well-being. Let's think about the whole individual. So you're starting to see a lot of investments in the United States in terms of businesses wanting to invest into their employees' well-being, which I think is a great term, because what that means is that we're looking at the whole person, not just a part of a person.
I love that, that concept that it is about you as a person, your overall health, whether that be physical, emotional, spiritual, or mental, rather than just one niche aspect of who you are, because they all play into how you show up in the workplace and whether you can bring it, right? So I do like that. But there's a not small part of me that's a bit surprised that America has really taken the well-being aspect and is starting to run with it, because we're always commenting on the differences in the sort of social care, welfare practices in the US versus the UK. Now, obviously, we've got things like the national health system here, where you have access to physical and mental health, if you can get it, for free in exchange for paying your taxes. Whereas in the US, you've obviously got the private healthcare system. And also, the attitudes that we are aware of from, I guess it's cultural, from watching TV about American attitudes to work and working life, I just didn't think that they were synonymous with, no, we care about your well-being. I thought it was a real, still, that kind of hustle culture and, you know, you can make it rich. The streets are paved with gold, but you have to work for it and give everything for it. So I'm surprised that companies are like, no, we recognize the importance of your mental well-being as well.
Well, there's a lot of that still there, right? There's a lot of the streets are paved with gold. There's a lot of still the hustle culture, but it's getting a lot of pushback now in terms of the hustle culture. Of course, we know one of the biggest things that accelerated all this in the United States was the pandemic, right? And so now employees, and that's how I actually started my consulting business, was out of the pandemic, because a lot of people was reaching out to me and saying, hey, we know you work in this mental health well-being field and you've been doing this for years. Could you come and talk to our employees about what that looks like in the workplace? And I was like, that's not something y'all talked about before? And I was amazed at how many companies wasn't talking about those type of things. And so what the pandemic did was accelerated the conversation. And then we got more research about when you really focus and invest into the well-being of your employees, we know they're way more productive. And also they have better work-life balance or work-life integration, however you want to call it. And so these investments into the well-being, and sometimes you need, and I'm not saying the pandemic was good for us, but sometimes you need things to spark things to say, hey, look at your businesses and look at your employees and look how they're responding to these situations and what can we do about it. And so that's what happened. And so it just accelerated and said, hey, they've always talked about well-being, but it said now it should be a strategy within your corporation, within your company, to invest in your employees. It's not just some, oh yeah, that's a perk. Mm-hmm. No, this has to be a benefit and this has to be an outcome in your organization.
I find that so, I was going to say heartening. I don't think that's a word. What's the opposite of disheartening? Heartwarming or encouraging? Yeah, I find it really encouraging. Yeah. Because the pandemic was a kick up the backside for everyone around the world, for the need to pay attention to, as you put it, the whole person, and with a particular focus on mental health. That happened here in the UK. I know Aurora has been going now for, I think we're in our sixth year of business. So we were going well before the pandemic, And I was absolutely convinced the pandemic was going to see us off, because it was a struggle as it was to get into the corporate space. But the, in fact, opposite happened because of work from home and lockdowns and organizations going, oh, yeah, I don't know what to do. We never cared about this stuff before. I don't know what to do. How can we help? So that was amazing. But and in fairness, we have seen a lot of companies talking a lot about the importance of you as an employee, the importance of focusing on taking care of your mental and emotional and social and financial well-being, as well as your physical health. There's a lot of talk about it. But when it comes down to it, now that we are out of the pandemic and we have found ourselves in a fresh new economic crisis in the UK, at least, where organizations really are struggling with a lot of unexpected costs, the investment in those things, apart from time, the investment in those things is very, very limited for the majority of organizations. Is that not the case then in the US?
So it depends. So this is a depends. So if you're going to, if we're talking about maybe a small business of 40 or 50 people, yes, they might not be able to invest. But my thing is, why are you not investing? Because we know the investment and the outcomes really outweigh what you, if you even invest a little into your employees, we know in terms of well-being, we know the outcomes really are really big and the benefits are really great in the long term. I think a lot of the problem is with investment is people are too short-sighted. Mm. So they really think too much into the short term, because a lot of businesses are thinking about, well, what's my return on investment in the next 2 months, or was my return on investments in the next 6 months? A lot of times with, and you know this, just, you know, working with businesses, sometimes it might take years to really get that investment back. And I just don't think a lot of companies want to invest in that because they're so thinking about the short term. Now, if you get a larger company or a large corporation, of course, they're gonna have more discretionary funds to make an investment, right? But then on top of it, it's just not alone about a monetary investment. Do you have the whole leadership that's buying in, right? And if you don't have the leadership that's buying in, then you're not going to see the return on your investment. We can do programs and training programs, and we can have coaches come in. But the reality of it is, if the leadership is not invested, you're not going to see the benefit of your investment into your employees around well-being and mental health or your financial health. So those things are really important. So yes, it depends on the corporation. But my question is, why are you not investing? If you can invest a little or you can invest a lot, there's some area where you can be invested in. Mm-hmm. So we are starting to see that. So it depends on the company, and it depends on the leaders. And if they're serious about it, because, you know, you and I talk, you can do a lot of talking, but you actually speak louder than words. And so you got to make those investments, and you got to act on it, because people will see that. Like, you can talk well-being, or yes, and we're about, we have a well-being culture. But here's what I know. Your employees are way smarter than you think. So let's not try to fool them. So
I think that's something that many organizations just don't get. We as a species now, thanks to technology, thanks to more education, thanks to better nutrition, whatever it is, we are much, much wiser, right? We know now, because of decades of really smart advertising, we now know when we're being sold to. And we know that if your actions do not line up with your words, that you're selling to us. And that might be in the part of the contributing factor to the Great Resignation. Was that a phenomenon over in in the Midwest.
Yeah, absolutely. The great resolution.
Yeah. So that might be why businesses are spending so much time chasing their tail, trying to keep good resources in position, is because they were paying lip service. And I found it so infuriating because, well, Aurora, not about that. I actually want to help people to be well. So finding those companies where the leaders get it and are prepared to invest in the long-term success of their employees and ultimately the organization. So, I completely agree. It's just still, though, it's not quite translating.
Yeah, because what you say and what you do, if they're not aligned, people are going to see that far away. And what it does, it really turns them off really, really, really fast. And I know, being a manager and being a leader in organizations, if I say something and then I do opposite of what I said, then that just really, it just shows like, okay, they're just giving lip service. And, you know, and I'm not saying we all can't be human and say things and not follow up. But if you constantly say these things and you don't do anything about it, you turn people off real fast.
It's about the organization's culture, ultimately. It's about, can an employee trust their organization, their employer? Is this a place where I feel that word, those words again, psychologically safe? Do I feel like I can trust the people I work with, report to, lead? Can I trust them to tell them how I really feel and know that I'll be able to get help and I won't have any sideways looks or an impact negative on my career, or, I won't get sidelined, or just any of the stuff that actually we talk about a lot as if it's a theoretical risk. But I am still seeing individuals coming to us concerned about these things and not necessarily being paranoid. They're right to be concerned. So there are a lot of companies which, you know, they can talk a lot about how important the employee is to them, but like we said just before, their actions are not lining up.
I'm curious on your side, in the UK, because a lot of the research comes out of the UK, and you have a plethora of research. So, and a lot of my background is in positive psychology, and I know that there's a lot of positive psychologists in the UK. I'm just curious why there isn't more investment on your side in terms of just corporate well-being and businesses. Because a lot of the great research, even on LinkedIn, a lot of the people that I follow is in the UK. And so when I see this, even though it's, we're starting to see more and more of this in the United States, but a lot of my followers, a lot of people that I follow and I get really good information and good stuff, and that's how I start following y'all, it comes out of the UK. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious why y'all don't see more investment in corporate well-being and mental health and things like that.
Now, I guarantee there will be people in our audience who are made up of HR and business leaders saying, we do invest, we are investing. So they are investing at a certain level. So there's a lot more investment in terms of what I call, in business terms, low ticket items, the things that will raise awareness, well-being days, having people come and speak, the odd training program that's like either half a day or a day, that kind of stuff. Where the reluctance and the reticence seems to be is investing in the transformational work, which is where we are at now in the life cycle of corporate well-being. Before pandemic, people just didn't know anything about the relationship between how their head was operating and therefore how they are able to function in the workplace. So basic understanding of it is okay not to be okay. This is where you go. This is where you can get access to help. These are signs of burnout. These are the things you can say to someone who's anxious. Definitely don't say this to someone who's anxious. That kind of stuff that seems really simple to some, but to others takes someone else to point it out for them. Yeah, they're happy to invest in that because it doesn't cost as much.
Now, I'm curious, because I know some people from the United States is going to listen to this. I'm curious of what you mean by more transformational.
Well, it's the stuff that you were talking about.
Things, because I have an idea of what you, but I like to unpack that. What you mean by more transformational?
I love this because this is me being interviewed on my own pod. I love it, but it's what you talked about, right? I've said this for years now. Change does not come. Or let me be specific here. Organizational cultural change does not come from the bottom up. It comes from the top down. So in order for you to have a culture that is psychologically safe, that enables good mental health and well-being throughout, long after we've left you and stopped training you, coaching you, supporting you, you need to have leaders who get it. Those leaders need to be coached and made aware. They need to be supported because their mental health is struggling too in many instances. So that kind of transformational stuff, by transformational, I mean changing your behavior, not just learning a piece, but changing your behavior. The things that you have spent 40 plus years learning and cultivating as this is how I lead need to be challenged for this new paradigm that we find ourselves working in. That's what I mean, is changing the thought process and the consequent actions that follow. So it takes more than just half a day, which is what everybody thinks that you're going to do. Well, can you come in and do this piece of work? We can give you 2 hours. We can give you a talk. Transformation doesn't happen in 2 hours. Otherwise, the world would be solved by now. It takes months. And months means you're investing a lot in the expertise of me and OB and our team to come in and work with you and to deliver training for a period of time, sure, and then coaching support, allow you to go and practice, get real world examples, have small group coaching, all this kind of stuff. It's quite involved. And when you lay out what's involved, some organizations just aren't prepared for that level of commitment. So, I think that's the stage we're at now, right? So, like we were speaking before recording, you were saying you're doing a lot of speaking engagements, that kind of stuff we are investing lots in, not necessarily paying. I don't know that we pay anywhere near as well as the US, but the US has always been a much shrewder country when it comes to capitalism. You know, if it's good and it gets people bums on seats, you'll pay for it. Whereas here we're like, oh, well, I can give you exposure. We can give you, it's really good for your brand. And I'm like, well, my brand awareness doesn't actually pay my bills. So...
100%.
So yeah, but those kinds of things. So there never used to be mental health and well-being conferences that were nationwide and now international. There are now. There are workplace well-being conferences and organizations that run events specifically for this. And there's so much access to information. And now what's happened is that your human resource leads, so the people who typically get tasked with looking after their employees' mental health and well-being, well, they are expected to go and, OB always calls it Frankenstein, go and pick a bit from here, a bit from here, a bit from here, and then figure out the solution. That's not the way it's done. You would never do that for your sales strategy. So why would you do that for any piece of your people strategy. It doesn't work that way. So that's my frustration with where it is at the moment. But I do believe we're just in a, say, we're at a shelf. We're going to take a step up, because eventually,
yes,
eventually organizations will realize that if they want to see the financial and economic returns that they're looking for, they're going to have to invest in these transformative pieces, because the odd workshops and things like that are not making a difference on the attrition rates or the absenteeism or presenteeism or anything like that. That's the kind of stuff that requires true leadership and leaders who actually understand how to engage their employees effectively.
Yeah, I do think we are headed in a really good direction. And I'll probably see in the next couple of years, we are going to turn a curve in terms of mental health, well-being for employees, because I really look at a lot of data around millennials and Gen Z, and they put high premium on mental health and well-being.
What am I? I was born in 79. What am I? Am I a millennial?
So me and you fall into the same Gen X.
Gen X. So we're neither of those?
So they put a high premium, and I'm not saying Gen X or the baby boomers doesn't put premium on that, but the Gen Zs and the millennials, they grew up with technology, so they had access to information, and they were one of the generations that were really early in destigmatizing mental health in the workplace. And so I'm starting to see where now, when those individuals get into leadership, you say mental well-being for your employees. Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Because now, yeah, fantastic. Yes. What do we need to do? Tell me more. What does that look like? What is the commitment? Because I want my employees to be able to have as much access to their mental well-being as possible, and we want to invest in that. So I do see these little pockets of leaders, and usually fall in those type of generations. Now, I'm not saying Gen X and baby boomers, they don't, but for some reason, for me, on my side and who I deal with, I tend to see those who are in that millennial or that Gen Z type of generation. They seem to just grab a hold to it just a little bit faster, those who are in our generations or before.
But I was wondering, do you not find that those same millennials and Gen Zs, I feel disingenuous calling it Gen Z, but the millennials and the Gen Zs, do they not look for technology to solve their well-being issues? Every company now has a revolutionary well-being app that they've launched. But and some of them are really good, but most of them are
not. Yeah, I see where you're going. Yeah, 100%. Of course, it's always technology and the apps. And I think those things are great for short term, because I always talk to people like, they're good for short term. Like if you're in a crisis or you need somebody to talk to right now, yes. But it really goes back to, and I love your word, I'm going to steal it, that transformational investment. that transformational investment is so, so critical. And I love technology, and I think technology is great. But I come out of a background of doing in-person stuff. I am really, I like to engage people in person. I like to engage people one-on-one. I like to engage groups. That's why I do a lot of speaking engagements. That is where I feel like I thrive at my best. Is technology great? 100%. Me and you are talking through a technology right now. You're on the other side of the world, and we can do a podcast. That's phenomenal. But when we're talking about real investment, when we're talking about making real, real change, we have to do stuff that's in person. We have to do stuff that's really engaging the whole person and having them present with us. I think that's where real relationships are built and real change takes place.
I think we, as a society, right, it's so clear we have benefited greatly from the advancement, and they have been massive, the advancements in tech. We expect so much. I'm not a Luddite by any means. I get my shopping on an app. I enter a store only as a last resort. I expect everything to be delivered the next day, and I get it. We want our health to be fixed the same way. However, when you're talking about mental health, when you're talking about emotional well-being, when you're talking about how someone feels, particularly when they've done such a good job of hiding that from the world, either through tech or not, that's why I think this area is slightly different. It's not something which is effective to do necessarily through an anonymous app with anonymous support, right? It is not something that a computer, especially when we know, we're cognizant of the fact that I've programmed into this app how I'm feeling, and it is AI that is generating the appropriate response, that's not going to help me. So like you, I believe apps and technologies have a place. That place is there, I think, much more in terms of prevention. So how you can give advice to healthy ways of living, blah, 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 blah. But just like every single person out there, if you're like me, you have about 150 apps on your phone, you use 5. People won't really look at them. When you're in crisis, you are not going to get the solution you need from an app. And furthermore, if someone says, but go to the app, and then you have to click this, press that, type that, and then only to be told, oh, we'll get you a chatbot to assist you, that's not going to help me. If your app then links to someone that you have no relationship with, it can be good, but it's unlikely to be unless you know that you can trust. How do I know I can trust this person? That's why I so strongly recommend having a combination of approaches when it comes to the support that you put on offer. Yes, some people will like the anonymity of tech, but others need to be in person, and your leadership must be trained face to face, even if it is virtual. I have no objection to you using Zoom to do it or Teams to do it, but they need to see the whites of my eyes and I need to see the whites of theirs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, to me, there's nothing like in person, because you can feel mannerisms mm-hmm. a little bit through technology, but when you're in front of a person, you feel the spirit. It's almost like if you text somebody and somebody texts in bold letters and they put exclamation mm-hmm. mark, and you take it as, are they yelling
exactly.
at me?
Yeah.
And maybe they weren't yelling. They were just being excited, you know? And so you could take it the wrong way. But if you're actually in their presence and they say something, you know, the spirit in which they said it, and you looked at their mannerisms and you looked at their body language, now you know, like, oh, they was excited, mm-hmm. but you can't get that through a text. And so I just think, I'm with you. Like the apps have their place. I think they're they're useful in some aspects, but for really, if we're talking long term change, we're talking behavior change, we're talking really investments. Like, it has to be in person. I come out of the mental health field in terms of counseling and clinical work, and I'm not a clinician. I'm more of a practitioner. I like to get my mm-hmm. hands dirty. But I've worked with those individuals for years, and so I know what that type of work is. And so I just think it's really important that you do have both. I'm going to put more weight on the in-person stuff. I'm going to put more weight on you building a relationship mm-hmm. with somebody and that trust than I do with an app. So it's funny that you talk about, you know, we want that short-term type of stuff. And so I'm just going to be real vulnerable here. And it's interesting because during the pandemic, in 2021, I was diagnosed with cancer. And so, so it was colon cancer. And when the doctor told me, he was like, well, we're going to remove it, and then you got to have chemo. And, you know, I felt so mad because I'm like, this cancer is intruding in my life. Can't we just fix it and move on, right? And he's like, this is going to be a 6 to 8 month process. And I'm like, 6 to 8 months? And I got to do chemo? And I got to go get surgery for all this? And I felt like it was intruding on my life.
Because you got things to do.
And I was like, and I'm like, this is short. Like, I wanted a short-term fix. And the doctor was like, this is not a short-term fix. And so it was one of those things that I had to really embrace and like, you know, this is just going to be, I have to just do this for the long haul to get back to me being healthy again. And so when people talk about short term and technology type of stuff, I'm just like, I always go back to when I had to go through that situation. I just wanted it to be done. I just wanted it to be over with. And it's just, that just wasn't going to happen. That was real life that I had to deal with.
And that's exactly how it is with mental health. It is real life. It is long term. I know that for me, it took at least, I don't know, a year and a half to come and fully climb out of that hole. And I will spend the rest of my adult life making sure I don't fall back in it. That's daily vigilance. That's a lot of work. It's so the short term is not an option for serious mental ill health problems. And quick fixes just don't exist. But just like with your recovery from cancer, if you invest in yourself, you have to see the goal at the end, which is health, whether it be physical or mental, and you do the work day by day by day by day, however long it takes to get well. If you look at if you translate that into your corporation, to your business, it's the same thing. It's a long-term process, a long-term investment, but you're doing all the things it takes to make your company well, so it can be there long into the future. Yeah. So we touched on it a little bit, but how is culturally mental health and well-being being seen in the US? Now, I know in the UK, the government has, let me be careful because I don't know, how people's political allegiances are. The government has invested a lot more than I thought it would have in mental health, but nowhere near as much as is needed. But at least there's a recognition that mental health is important, right? Is that the same in the US?
Yes. So this is where I think we're going to start taking a turn. We're starting to see a lot of investments in terms of the government starting to invest into the mental well-being of just, you know, just the country as a whole. There's a lot more opportunities in terms of grant opportunities. There's a lot more funding for state agencies to get funding. There's a lot more of monies for those who might do an in-person type of addiction treatment type of stuff. So we're starting to see a lot more. I know in my state, they're starting to invest a lot more. And so they're earmarking a lot more millions and millions of dollars for mental health. So this is why I think, particularly in the United States, that we're going to start seeing a turn. I think we're going to turn that corner in terms of, hey, we have the money to, if we're talking about treatment, or we have the money to provide therapy services. We have funding over here to bring more awareness around mental well-being. So yes, there's a lot more investments starting to take. And you just have more champions now for it, right? So when a politician starts to champion for it, and then he has, you know, his constituents saying like, we need more, you know, behavioral health services in our community, like, they're starting to make that happen. So yes, we're starting to see a lot more investments, which is good, because then of course that starts to roll over into the workplace, which is really important, because one of the reasons that I promote mental well-being for employees, because we know that most people spend a majority of their time at work, right? And so now your workplaces become the institution in which people are spending a lot of time in that place. And so we have to create cultures and very positive cultures where we can enhance the well-being of the employee. And so that's why I'm just a big proponent of employee well-being is so, so critical, because that institution, that workplace institution is critical because it used to be, and not to get too political or anything, it used to be, particularly for the African-American community, it used to be your Black churches, mm-hmm. right? And so we know church engagement and going to church is like down, really, really bad. And so what we know now is like, all right, well, where are people going? Well, people are really trying to find purpose in their work, yeah. right? They're really trying to find meaning in their work. And that institution, that workplace, our workforce is so, so important. And if you, as an employer, and you as an organization, don't understand that, you know, you as an institution need to be invested in that mental well-being, you might be in trouble. And so I just think that's just really important. So we are seeing a lot of investments. I don't have a lot of data and number on it, but I see it all the time. They're always putting it on TV like, hey, we're trying to get this much funding, or they passed this bill in the federal government and said they're going to start investing in mental health and well-being of their community. So I think that's important.
I think that's the perfect place for us to end this podcast episode, because I think you summed it up just perfectly. Just work is more than just a place you go to earn a living. It's where we find our sense of purpose and meaning, or it should be. And then employers have a responsibility, therefore, to support us in the amount of time we spend in that place, being somewhere where we can go and get that purpose and meaning and leave happy, healthy, productive. So thank you. Before I let you go though, Michael, let me ask you our signature question. As a fellow well-being rebel, which you have proven over and over again in this episode, what is the one change you'd like to see take place in workplace well-being? If you could, I don't know, if you could wave a magic wand or have one wish and see something different in the world of workplace well-being, what would it be?
I would like to see more healthy interactions between employee and employer in terms of that relationship, because what I tend to see is getting really contentious sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you talked about trust. And once you lose trust between any type of relationship, it's hard to come back from that. And so if I could say, wave a magic wand, let's make it, and you already said this, let's make our workplaces more psychologically safe.
Michael, thank you so much for giving us your time and for joining us all the way from the US of A. And do not be a stranger.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wellbeing Rebellion. If you liked what you just heard, please share it with your colleagues, follow us on LinkedIn, the link will be in the show notes, and generally show us some love.
We want to build a whole army of fellow rebels who want to create positive workplaces for everyone. Will you join the rebellion? See you next time.